I want to tell you a little bit about me and CUNY. So my journey in America started with CUNY. So in 2000, I came to the United States as an international student, and I did my MFA in television production at Brooklyn College. So that's how my journey in the U.S. started, and the degree really helped me launch my career. So in 2004, I started teaching at Kane University in New Jersey. I was there for 11 years, and so during that time, you know, I've done reporting, I've done other documentaries, and in 2015, I had an opportunity to move over to your college, which is part of CUNY. Usually we're one of the forgotten CUNYs, so here I want to do some shout-outs for your college. So we are a four-year institution in Jamaica, Queens. So anyway, I teach in the Performing and Fine Arts Department. I teach courses in documentary production, and I also teach film history. I've been there. This is my fifth year there, and so it's been wonderful. CUNY has. I really appreciate that all the opportunities given to me by CUNY, and I'm very happy to be part of CUNY and serving the students of New York City. So today we're going to watch three short films that I did in 2018, 2019. So as most of you know, last year in Taiwan, it's an important milestone for our LGBT movement. So our constitutional court passed the marriage equality ruling. So I was so I think maybe I started following the movement probably in 2017. I sort of, you know, as a journalist, you always look for good stories to tell. So I smell something. I think, oh, something's happening. So I started interviewing people, talking to people, and I actually didn't realize it was going to happen so quickly, and I'm very happy that it did. And I'm very proud of this achievement in Taiwan. This year, so this year in May 24th, I think, that was the day that it went into effect. And the day after, there was a big celebration in front of the presidential office building, organized by one of the main activist groups. So it was still kind of in the middle of the semester, but I decided I wanted to be there to witness the moment. And so I flew back to Taipei. And as a journalist, again, I wasn't just not going to go for and do nothing, so I decided to document it, and so that's why we have the follow-up, which is it's pretty short, and but you guys will see. And then the third film is Double Dead and One Queer Teen, My Rainbow Family. So that was the last-minute add-on. I'm very happy that we could do that, and two of the main subjects are also here today, so they'll... I'll be talking to you guys later on. Okay, so now I believe there's still some snacks left there. Yeah, so help yourself and sit back and relax. Enjoy the film.
I'm aware that I'm gay when I was a teenager, about 14 years old. I was in a school that the whole class is all male, and I have a crush with my classmate. And at that time, I don't know what is that. I just really fond of him, and so each move of his that just catch my attention, and I did not realize what is that. And later on, that people, the classmate are joking about this is homo. Homo, it's a very negative way to portray the relationship between two male. So I very soon I learned that's something that you cannot be seeing.
Thank you.
So maybe I think we can start with the first two films since they're connected, and then we can talk about it for a little bit, and then I'll invite Lance and Stuart to join me, and we can focus on that film. I'm sure you have a lot of questions for them. Yes.
I was wondering how do you pick which person to follow, and why you pick like maybe like lesbian couple and or like men or the single men. So how do you meet these people, and why do you choose to focus on that?
Okay. Well, as you can see, my work is very journalistic. So the way I approach it, I kind of approach it like a journalist. So I would talk to the people that I know first, and I start with the activists, so I know some of the activists. So I ask them, you know, do you know anyone who might be willing to be interviewed? Because a lot of people, it's okay to do a print story with them. They're happy to talk to you, but they don't want to be filmed. So I went through that, and you know, I talked to a lot of people, and then finally, these were the people who were willing to be interviewed and reveal their identity. Because for me, I hate to, I always try to disclose their, it's always full disclosure because I feel like as a journalist, you need to protect your credibility. So, yeah. And I figure, you know, I have men and women, so that's sort of more balanced. And particularly, the lesbian groups were, in my opinion, were the ones who's really behind the LGBT movement because they need the legal protection for their children. I mean, as you saw, what happened, that, you know, they were saying that they had no legal protection whatsoever. So they were really the ones behind that. Yeah. Because more lesbian couples want to have kids. So, yes.
You were mentioning that there were not as many people. Are people still feeling very uncomfortable with
coming out? Well, as you can see, Zheng Zhiwei, who was from Taiwan Hotline, LGBT Hotline, even his partner didn't come out. So, you know, these are the people who are in the forefront of the LGBT movement in Taiwan, and even their partner would not come out. So I think in Taiwan, you know, family is probably the biggest hurdle. I think a lot of people, they are perfectly okay to come out with their colleagues and their friends, but not to their family, because, you know, there's this not in my backyard sort of mentality. You know, it's okay if your son is gay, it's okay if your daughter is lesbian, but not my kids. Yeah.
So who are the people who are, you know, giving very toxic propaganda against the LGBT people?
I would say religious groups is one of them, and also you know, education, Asians put a lot of emphasis on education, so you can see there were some parents' group were involved as well. Yeah, because they're thinking, you know, because another issue in this piece is the gender equality education. That's sort of part of the conversation. So a lot of parents are concerned that, my kids are very young, you know, how do you teach them about these things? And then, of course, there were a lot of misinformation out there. From the opposition, you know, talking about even bestiality, you know, talking about these very sort of crazy ideas. Yeah.
How are you distributing the film? Have you shown it in Taiwan?
This one, yes, the first one I have shown it at a film festival called Urban Nomad, and I generally, the way I work is the first round is film festival, so all three films has been in film festivals. The 2009, the two pieces from 2019 are still in the festival round. I think this week we're doing a screening in Italy.
Wow.
So, yeah, thank you. Yeah, but I don't make any money from them. So I'm here. I'm working, and they're showing the film, yeah. But I did attend the premiere of the two films from 2019 in Palm Springs LGBT Film Festival. So I did go to that one. Yeah. So that's sort of the first round. And then usually sometimes you get emails from distributors, but they're generally smaller ones. You know, because these short films are very difficult to program. to distribute. So a few years ago, I had a film that was distributed by Third World Newsreel. So that's an educational distributor. So it's very limited. So so I'm very grateful that I have a full-time job with CUNY. They pay my bills. And I actually got a grant, so I also have, since it's being recorded, I want to say thank you to PSC CUNY for providing a grant for me, yeah. And keep that coming. Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about protections or discrimination in Taiwan? So, okay, it passed the same-sex marriage rights, but then how about can you get fired from your job or housing discrimination?
So these are the things. I mean, I actually don't have a lot of details about these, but you know, it takes time for the society to accept it. I think even in the United States, right? Even in the United States, it's legal to get married, but that doesn't mean your family or your colleagues will accept that. You know, there are many different ways that they can discriminate against you. That's why it's called glass ceiling, because you can't see it. So it really takes it takes time for people to learn and accept. Lance?
Can I just add, because yes, you can get fired in Taiwan for being gay. There's no legal protection, even though gay marriage passed, but there's no other equal rights protection at all. And
I don't think people will tell you, like, oh, we're firing you because you're gay.
Right.
Right?
That's why
I think people are smarter than that.
In Taiwan, even at work, not only to a family, also at work, they're not going to come out at all. And so just still a lot of obstacles there.
Yeah. But this legal protection is the first step.
Yeah.
And I think since the passing of the law, I think more people are seeing it as a possibility. Before that, it was impossible for many people. But now it gives them a little hope. Over time, hopefully, it'll be more widely accepted. Yeah. So you really have to thank the people who come out, you know, for having that courage to be the first group to register and to be out in every way. Yes?
The three films are really very optimistic and give a sort of sense. This is the way we're going. But I was wondering, is that accurate, or aren't there groups that are really oppositional to this sort of thing? And that it's a question.
Yeah.
Aren't there groups like that, and what might you do to reflect the appropriate response?
The opposition, I think they're still working on something. They're still campaigning. But I think the interpretation from the Constitutional Court is big. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them to change that. But there might be other ways. You know, for example, one of the things that they're working on right now, the LGBT group thinks that this is just phase one of the marriage equality bill, because the rule is that if you're getting married with a foreigner whose original country does not allow same-sex marriage, then it's not okay. So there's that little clause there. So I think they're working on that right now. So, for example, if you're marrying an American, you know, in America, same-sex marriage is legal here, so then that's okay. But if you're marrying someone, let's say, from China, where same-sex marriage is not legal, then that's not okay. You can't get a Taiwanese permanent residency through that.
Okay.
So what is your question for them?
The question is, was there ever a time when you experienced more discrimination by being of different ethnicities than by being a gay woman?
You mean Taiwan or in the U.S.?
Taiwan or anywhere. I mean, there have been incidents of racism. There have been incidents of heterosexism.
Well, cross-racism.
You mean like interracial, because they're
right.
In an interracial relationship.
Don't believe that, you know, Asians should marry non-Asian.
Let alone white folks shouldn't marry people of color.
Yeah. Actually, as a person of color, we get this kind of dislike look in the Midwest or in the South more, but in Taiwan, we don't get that kind of look. More like
curious, because the white superiority, the idea of what is better,
what
that kind of white superiority, it's permeated in the popular culture. So in Taiwan, still a lot of people think that white people are better, and that's why they don't see me having a white husband as something to dislike.
Because you marry up.
Right. And I have a niece who used to have a black boyfriend. They had a daughter together. And when my niece brought her boyfriend to Taiwan, they were looked down upon. So that racism is in Taiwan as well. It's about skin. Yes, it's about skin color. And it's really everywhere.
And so there have been lots of incidents of both. But I don't think I would say that one is more than the other. I don't want to do oppression Olympics. I think they've both been present all the way through. If you are, our team now is 6'4", by the way, and has a booming bass baritone voice. So is off doing their own thing, as 16-year-olds do. So, but Kalani, if they were here, would talk about their experience of what it's like being mixed race and their experience in and how one of their most painful experiences was when another student of color African descent started talking about stereotyping about, oh, you must have a small penis and you must have a flat butt, and it was like, holy cow, this person should be my ally, and yet here I am getting. And so we've got folks of color who have internalized racism, we have white folks who are racist. I mean, there's a lot. So I think there's a lot of complexity, and we share a bunch of those.
Getting down to business, right?
Yeah, but basically the film is really focuses on our bringing Kalani to the world. And it's just,
I should include the cover of the book at the end of the film. Yeah, and the information where to order.
Use the pronoun they, them for Kalani.
Yes.
Ever since Kalani emerged as non-binary, pansexual, so for 2.5 years.
Yes.
So in the film was filmed prior to Kalani sharing that. Kalani shared that toward the end,
right,
and then we went right with it. So.
But would it invite some sort of confusion sometimes? Like
confusion on whose part?
The more than one. No, I would just.
It's plural.
Right. It took me a little second to realize you're following Kalani and David. They're two of them.
Yes, so for folks who aren't used to language that kills the gender binary, it can take a while. But we've known Kalani, you know, forever. And so it seemed a very appropriate progression for them. And while we occasionally slip, I mean, we all do. But as Kalani said, they're really good about it. They don't go off on people if they don't. And so we get surprised when we're around people talking to Kalani who use he and him, when we've been using they and them for 2.5 years, and Kalani is very open to people using very gracious differences, but we work really hard to use what they want. And
but it also gives us the opportunity to educate people about the gender spectrum, about non-binary, so.
Yeah, I wonder if I were that age and I had that comfort and clarity, if I might not be using he and him too. More. Questions, comments, reactions?
Do you have a problem for Instagram?
Kalani does. I'm on Twitter. I've done, I think, almost 150,000 tweets in 4 years. So there are lots of pictures there. And you have Facebook.
Right. It's sort of public because I do post a lot of stuff publicly, and Kalani has their arts portfolio stuff public on Instagram, and I don't do an Instagram.
None of us do the other ones. Was there something that you wanted to see, or what was
there? There are pictures in the book.
Oh yeah, we can do that. I'm also a CUNY professor. So
oh yes,
I'm
yes.
In
by the way,
the Bronx. Lance,
introduce yourself.
The long time that Lance has been a professor was we co-taught We think we're the only gay couple ever to co-teach a graduate course, let alone undergrad, in Asia. So you saw Suju, Professor Chow, and she hired us to teach Taiwan's first sexuality counseling class, both for master's and doctoral students. We taught the master's course bilingually, because we thought the master's students' English would be more difficult. It was the reverse, and the doctoral students got me along. My Mandarin is Ethiopian, and this one is fully quadrilingual. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Alan Kanani described himself non-binary. What does it mean?
A few years back, they identified themselves as gay. Now they identify themselves as pansexual. Because they see gender as spectrum, so if you're able to fall in love with multiple genders, and they see that as pansexual.
Makes sense.
Yes.
So as Kalani's identity has evolved, Kalani has chosen language that goes on. And we're just along for the ride.
Curious why you only have one kid instead of having more. Or I ask this question because I've done research on China, and a lot of LGBTQ parents are thinking about having two kids so they can grow up together, having this experience together. So as a support for each other. I'm curious why you only have one kid, and also I'm curious about your experience, being like gay father. Do you have a support group, or because a lot of lesbian mom I interview has support groups, and I'm curious what kind of social support system outside the family that you have.
Well, I don't know if we look it now or not, but we are in our mid-50s, and so when we started this, when we got together, we were in our early 30s. It took us 8 years before we actually had the finances and everybody ready to actually do this. So at that point, we were in our early 40s, and it was either we do a second kid or we have a retirement fund. For folks who don't know, we are retiring to Taiwan in 12 years. So we're very excited. Both Kalani and Lance are dual nationals. Kalani is now the first Taiwan citizen with two dads' names on both an international marriage certificate and an international birth certificate that occurred in December. So we don't know where Kalani will be. We're all headed out of the U.S. That's a guarantee. So it was financial primarily. We've had lots of people ask. The other reason we talk about in the book too is no child could compete with the story that you just heard. There's absolutely no way that we felt it was fair to bring another child along when Kalani had this incredibly unique way of being coming into the world. You just could not compete with that. So you met my family. My mom was in the background a couple of shots, but it's just me and my sister. Lance is the youngest of nine. So you want to talk about nine versus one?
Oh, sorry.
All right. Well, talk about your siblings and how many kids they've had total, because I think that's an interesting.
Yeah,
Your sister, your big sister, how much older is she?
Oh, she's 14 years older than
14
me.
14.
And my eldest brother is 18 years older than me. So there's a huge age difference, and so and I already have a lot of nieces and nephews. Altogether, we have 16. Yeah, 16. Among all nine siblings, so that's a lot.
But no one had more than two kids, and two only had one. So
right.
Growing up in the huge went to much smaller.
Yeah. And speaking of the support system, you're absolutely right, because I just want to tag up what earlier question about Taiwan. The lesbian moms group started out very, very early on, I think over 15, 16 years ago, and when we went to Taiwan the first time, with Kalani as a baby, we were invited to one of their parties, so we shared about our stories, and at that time, we also shared about how important it is to use picture books to really educate the kids. So that's the beginning of the LGBTQ parents' rights, family rights advocacy group in Taiwan. That's the beginning of that. And So that was the lesbian moms group. And eventually they evolved into, they understand their gay dads, and they added to become LGBTQ family rights advocacy. So becoming more inclusive. So you're absolutely right. Lesbian moms have been in the forefront to do a lot of work. Also, they have much stronger support system in Taiwan, also in the U.S. And when we first had Kalani, actually, we lived in a town that didn't really have any other LGBTQ parents at all. But in the whole Central Jersey, there was a group that people would meet once in a while, but we were not very close. So we have to build our support system, reaching out to non-LGBTQ, meaning straight parents, and build that way. And in the meantime, to expose Kalani to other families with LGBTQ parents.
And now talk about what you're doing.
Now I'm...
Shameless.
I'm on the student company for API Rainbow Parents. API Rainbow Parents is the Asian PFLAG in your city, metro area, and I recognize how important it is to really work on family acceptance and working with parents and helping LGBTQ individuals who don't have supportive families to reach out to them. So since I'm both gay and parents of a queer child, so I figure I'm playing this double role to be able to bridge both groups.
And Lance is a doctor in physical therapy. He practiced for 31 years. He's now retired and now a full-time queer API
activist.